Well, again, good morning. I appreciate everybody coming out. Appreciate everybody. This is my little, you haven't seen my wife, sir, and the kids, my little baby, who's 8 months old. So if you hear a baby crying, it's not mine. It's not mine. And she's just looking around and wondering what in the world daddy's doing. And a lot of times when Laura has to take her to the nursery, at first, I said, well, how'd she do? She said, well, she looks up at the speaker because she can hear my voice. She doesn't know where I am. I'm glad she got to come and everybody got to come. This is my, I say this in case I get confused. This is my 10th lesson in the last 7 days. I was at VBS in Dyersburg, Tennessee. Then I was at Athens, Alabama Friday. And so sometimes and they all were different lessons. So if I start talking about the Ethiopian eunuch going to services with David, I'm confused, you know, and by the end of the week, I don't know what'll happen. You get them all kind of confused together, you know. But it all works out, you know. It all works out well. But VBS here, you know, in my travels, what the kids do here at the VBS, it's one of the best. And when people ask me other places, well, any way we can improve, or there anything we can do? A lot of times, I'll just give them suggestions and tell them what, you know, what's going on here. And over all the years, I remember going to the old church building that you had. And now here, and to come back every year and be able to see people that haven't seen. Now, Margaret, you know, I started preaching when I was 20. So Margaret, I don't get Margaret's age. See, I started preaching when I was 20, so I know Margaret from a long time. See, so I'm young, so. I preached when Margaret was in college at Florida, and to come back and to Victor and the kids and to see other people grow. And of course, always when you come back, there's some that aren't here anymore. And they've gone to be with the Lord, and that makes you sad. In some ways, because of the physical way we are, we just miss people. One of my girls I'll tell you just a little quick story. A lot of times people used to say, Paul, when I preached in Utah, did you convert any of the Mormons? And I used to say this, if somebody was a good Mormon, it's hard to teach them because what they like to do and what I think the Bible teaches is there's some contradictions there. So what I would introduce, they weren't excited about it because maybe they did it or didn't do it, something like that. I met this young lady. Well, she was in her 40s. Her name was Karen. And she was a military girl, a lady, Air Force girl. She lived across the street, a single lady. She lived across the street from one of our members. Well, one of our young couples and the husband left the wife and the baby, and they really had no place to go. And so Karen invited them to come across the street and live with them. And they did, and so they would go to services, a case Heather would, and Amanda, her baby, Karen started going with them. And for a whole year, Karen was a good member of the LDS church. She would, every Friday night, they'd have me over for a Bible study. And during that time, I'd have me my pizza and donuts. That's what they'd have me to come and I study with them. At the end of the year, Karen asked me if I would baptize her. And I did. And she never looked back. She was faithful from then on. It took a long time. She could not tell her family what she had done or she would have been disowned. She couldn't even tell those that she shopped with because it's the idea of withdrawal. They truly withdraw from you. The people that you shop with, if the grocery stores and things, they won't have much to do with you. So she had to kind of do it slow and blend it in. And they knew that she wasn't attending where she did all her life growing up. She was going to the Kaysville church. But as time went on, she started teaching class and just was a fine lady. And on the prop, she had never heard what the truth was. She had a lot of great characteristics. Again, I talked to her. She's a lot like the eunuch. The eunuch was a good religious person studying. Hey, can you explain this? Some of this is new. Some of it I don't understand. And that's how Karen was. Well, a few months ago, Karen passed away. And she had cancer. And I asked Heather. I said, Heather, what are the funeral arrangements? And are you ready for this? Karen always was sad that her family wouldn't listen to some things she tried to teach. And she's always sad that, you know, we couldn't get the LDS church. In our town, there was 55 LDS churches in ours. That's Mormon churches in us. And she said, I wish we could all get together, but, and so forth. So here's what her funeral arrangements were. This is what she wanted. She said, they had it in the LDS church building called the ward, had it at the ward, the LDS church building. And one of the members of the church who took my place, he preached a sermon. The prayers were led by one of the members from the church I used to preach at. And the singing was a cappella singing. First time they'd ever had a cappella singing at this building. And that's what Karen asked. But her goal was, and at the end, my friend said, Karen finally got everybody together. But she had to die to do it. Now, you look for Karen, and she'll just be a great girl. You should be walking around in her military outfit and saying, hi, how are you? Hi, how are you? And she just was a kind girl. And I tell you that story to say there's so many people out in the world. Of course, there's some who know nothing about the Lord. And then there's those who know about the Lord, but they just have a few things maybe that they don't understand fully, or maybe some things they've never heard about. And that's where we try to let our light shine. We try to let our light shine and have a chance to teach, just like Karen did. And it took her all the way till she had passed away to get her family and friends to hear some things she wanted to. So she was a great lady. And I just say that story so that I just wanted to share that with you. Okay, let's start with a prayer. Father in heaven, again, we're so thankful for all that you do. And we're thankful now we can study about the life of David. Truly an individual that was seeking you. But also so many times, Father, he fell short, as we all do. And we ask you to please help us learn from David's life, the ups and the downs, and the courage he had, and the failures he had too, that we might be better servants today. Thank you for loving us. And be with all the VBS teachers today, especially those with the young children. We help that they'll learn about the King and that they'll be servants of his. Thank you so much for loving us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. So we're going to look at, in class here, we're going to look at the life of David and how God played such an important part in David's life. But also realize David wasn't some superhuman. He didn't have any special physical appearance or physical strength. He's a lot like all of us. And he's also a model of a lot of do's and don'ts, things you should do and things that you shouldn't do. We're introduced to him in 1 Samuel chapter 16. He lived about 1,000 years before Christ. Here's something interesting. Did you know there are more verses devoted to David's life than anybody else in the Old Testament? That's interesting. And there's a reason for that. I think because of his life, it teaches us, boy, I want to be like David. Oh, I don't want to be like David. I want to be like David. No, I don't want to be like David. What did David do that was so good? What did he do that was so bad? And you have an individual, and it's just a lot like us. We have a good day, we have a bad day. We have a good hour, then a bad hour. And we can learn so much. When you think of heroes, when you think of a hero, what comes to your mind? What's a hero?
Someone who saves your life.
Somebody who saves your life? What else is a hero? What does a hero look like? What does a hero look like? What's that? A Marine. There you go. Yeah. A soldier. There you go. Any kind of soldier. What else? What about, what's that? A rescuer. How old are they? Depends. Yeah. It could be any. It could be a little. You hear about sometimes someone who's a hero, a little boy. This recently I read in the paper, he was 4 years old and his mama wasn't breathing one morning. And so he called 911. And by the time they got there and they fixed her up, she had had a heart attack. That little boy was a what? Hero. He's only four. He didn't have very many muscles. He didn't have a lot of knowledge, but he sure knew 911. So heroes come in all shapes and sizes and abilities. The idea of being a hero, David truly was a hero, but he didn't have a lot of those characteristics that sometimes the world thinks. Sometimes a hero is bigger than life. I guess Batman and some of those guys, the Hulk, those kind of guys, they're bigger than life. Outgoing. He's my hero. I want to be like him. And again, we said victorious. David was a hero, but not because of any great physical strength, not because he always did right. He started off as a shepherd and went from a king. And usually a shepherd, just like any job, it wasn't one. In fact, as I said, other than that man, how many people have you ever met in your life? What do you want to do when you grow up? I want to be a shepherd. Even today, it's not probably one of the top 100 jobs people want to have. It's not that advice. Even if somebody wanted to be a farmer, he's going to at least want some cows and some horses. In fact, sheep, as I've told you before in one of my other lessons, sheep are the dumbest animals on earth. They are. How many times have you seen a sheep in a circus? The sad thing is, even if you go, there's no circus to go to anymore, but that's a whole nother sermon. I love Barnum and Bailey Circus. That's all I'm going to tell you. I love the circus. And if they even come back, I'm going to be the first guy there. Sheep, you know why? Jump through a hoop. They don't know what to do. They're just, and as far as being vicious, how about the Carolina sheep? Tampa Bay sheep. Sheep, that's we laugh because that's the way sheep are. And in fact, when you see a sheep, what's the first, if you're going down the road and you got your kids and you see a sheep, other than going, bah, what's the first thing going? Oh, look at the sheep. And so the idea of, it wasn't, you know, we're going to say like a big man, macho type of a job. You're out by yourself. You're kind of a loner. And even in the social class back then, as probably today, it's not one that you would be in the high social class if you were a shepherd. He went from the low class job to the what? High class. He's going to be king. Raise your hand here if you've ever been a king. Raise your hand if you've ever been a shepherd. We haven't done either of those. David went from a shepherd to a king. It had tremendous, as we said, spiritual highs. He stood up to Goliath when nobody else would. Yet it had some spiritual lows. He had some regrettable events. He knew better, and of course he didn't. Then, through it all, it says David, he learned and he trusted. Look at Psalms 3 now in verse 3. Psalms 3 in verse 3. We're going to go back to Samuel in just a second. In Psalms 3 in verse 3, here's what it says. Here's what David says. And if you want to know about David, you just read the Psalms, of course. We're going to go there a lot. Psalms 3, verse 3. But thou, O Lord, you are a shield for me. You're my glory and the lifter up of my head. First of all, he's a shield, and a shield protects you from of course, back in those days, from arrows and things like that. But it's my shield. I carry it out front so I won't get hurt. You're my glory and you lift up my head. And, of course, that would be the idea, like, you know, when you're sad and you're down and your countenance is down, it's the Lord. When we tell people, it's going to be okay. When we say it's going to be okay, I tell you how we know it's going to be okay because God's in control. Now, that doesn't mean that you might never get better physically, but it's going to be okay. Because blessed are those who what? Blessed are those that die in the Lord. It's going to be better. It's going to be better. Your tears will all be what? Wiped away. It's going to get better. Now, on earth, it might not. But when we say it's going to be okay, we understand that because we're not just looking on the 80 years, the vapor life we have here. We're looking on eternity. Okay, look at 1 Samuel 16 now. First 11 verses. Here you have Saul now, his background, he's the king now, and he's going to lose his kingship to David, and Samuel's going to pick the new king. And the Lord said unto Samuel, 1 Samuel 16:1, how long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I've rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill your horn with oil, go I'll send thee to Jesse, the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons. And Samuel said, how can I go? If Saul hears it, he'll kill me. And the Lord said, take a heifer with thee and say, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. And call Jesse to the sacrifice. I'll show thee what thou shalt do. Thou shalt anoint unto him whom I name unto thee. And Samuel did that which the Lord spoke and came to Bethlehem. And the elders of the town trembled at his coming and said, comest thou peaceably? He said, peaceably, I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Sanctify yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice. And he sanctified Jesse and his sons and called them to the sacrifice. And it came to pass when they were come, he looked on Eliab and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said to Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I refused him. For the Lord seeth not as a man sees, for the Lord looks on the outward appearance, but the man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart. Then Jesse called Abinadab and made him pass before Samuel. He said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. Then Jesse said, Shimamah, to pass by. And he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. And again, Jesse made seven of his sons pass before Samuel. Samuel said to Jesse, the Lord hath not chosen these. And Samuel said to Jesse, are all these your children? He said, there remaineth yet the youngest. And behold, he keeps the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, send and fetch him, for he will not sit down till he comes hither. So Saul is the king. Saul's sinfulness, of course, caused God to replace him as king. And Samuel, he loved Israel. And he was sad that Saul was not a good king. Now God sends Samuel to anoint the next king. And it's going to be David. Now look at 1 Samuel 13, 14. Why did God, we'll talk throughout the week, but in 1 Samuel 13, 14, why did God choose such a man? Well, look what it says about him. And you're familiar with this, 13, 14. But now he says, thy kingdom to Saul shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart. And the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. The phrase, a man after God's own heart. If I was to say this, what is that? A lot of different, you know, definitions. But if I would say, boy, I'm trying to win that girl. I'm trying to win, when I was dating Laura, I'm trying to win her heart over. I'm after her heart. Well, what does that mean? What does it mean to be after someone's heart? What do you want? But you, what do you want when you're after somebody's heart? Yeah, you want their love. You want their affection. You want them to think about you. You want them to say, you're the best. And I convinced her, didn't I? Some of y'all convinced her, but you know, you're the best. I want her to, when she gets up in the morning, what do I want to think about? You know, when we dated, you know, we talked for 5 months on the phone before we saw each other. 4 or 5 months on the phone. And I'd call her at 10. I'd call her about, Reno's time was different. By the time she put her kids to bed, like at 9, her kids were like 2, 4, and 6, like that. So she put them to bed like at 9 o'clock her time. That's 7 o'clock my time. I always want to talk later. She said, hey, it's midnight. I said, no, it's not. It's only 10, you know. So I'd call her and we'd talk for 2 hours. But as time went on, I couldn't wait till 7 o'clock, which is now. I want to go soon. And believe it or not, she wanted to talk sooner. So she'd tell me some, the kids would tell me stories later on. She goes, you know, we'd have supper. It'd be 6:30. And she'd say, okay, time for bed. Let's go, time for bed. And everybody like 2 and 3 go, time for bed. We just ate supper, you know. Well, you look tired today, you know. And I'll be in after a while, a couple, 3 hours, and read your bedtime story. But things like that, that's what happens. You can't, in the morning, you can't wait to talk to that person because they've won your heart and you've won their heart. And now when it says here, David, he was after God's heart. He wanted God to love him. He wanted God's approval. And he wanted God's affection. He wanted God's help. He wanted to know that there was someone there taking care of me. So that's what I think the idea, a man after God's own heart. He wanted God's approval. He didn't want to be king like him. He didn't want to be superior in the sense that I'm another God. But he wanted God to say, that's my good and faithful servant. And that should be a goal for all of us. We should be after God's affections. And David was. And then when he disobeyed, when we talk about Bathsheba coming up and you see the psalm that he wrote after, he writes it really with tears in his eyes and tears in his heart because he disappointed the main one that he wanted to be able to say, that's my servant. He was so sad. He wanted God's approval again. And again, the story goes on, of course, and he gets it. And we'll talk about that. But that's God knew that, so he's picking him. And we'll see some other things that he learned. Now, who was going to be, what family did he come from in chapter 16? Whose family was it? Jesse. Where was Jesse from? What city? Is there going to be any more kings coming from Bethlehem? Sure, you see the story? How it kind of all gets together? Now, how many sons did Samuel meet? How many brothers? Seven. Who's missing? And it's probably because maybe he's too young. You're not even thinking about him getting in there. He's too young. And when you think about this, which son did it look like he wanted? Samuel said, this must be the one. Who was that? Eli, in verse 6. Why did he say, hey, this must be the guy? Because why? What does it say? His appearance and the height of his stature. And really, of course, back in all days, but back then, the idea of a king being the big man, the tallest man, many times, the rulers and the captains of armies. Saul was the tallest, as you'll see. And things like that. So you have, but this guy looks like he should be the king. But he wasn't. Well, you know, when we choose, when people are being chosen today for jobs, many times in positions, too many times, who gets picked? What kind of a person? You got to be what? You got to be good looking. You just look on television. I'm here to say I've never seen a homely weather lady. Have you? I've never seen a homely weather lady. And I've never seen just a goofy guy doing the news either. If he's a young guy, he's usually pretty good looking. And he's got all his hair. Now, if you've been there a long time and everyone likes you, like the guy on the Today Show, whatever his name is, does the weather, old Al Roker. Everyone likes Al. He's just a good old guy, I guess. So you can grow into that. But not when you get a job at first. They want someone good looking, someone who's famous. And many times if you're famous, hey, we're going to hire this guy. You look at sportscasters, most of the new sportscasters, they're usually someone who used to be an ex-athlete. And that's okay. And even with preaching, they have certain qualifications. Most congregations, they want a young preacher with 20 years experience and young children. I got it made. I got 7 kids. One's 8 months old. I got 40 years experience, and I look 20. I ought to have a job till I die. Paul, come preach for us. I'm sorry, I'm 80 years old. I don't drive anymore. Yeah, but you're young looking, got all the kids. And so we all have these qualifications. David wasn't a giant killer yet. He wasn't a giant killer yet. He wasn't someone you think would get picked. And remember, God looks how? He looks on the inside, not the outside. Who's going to be a good servant for me? Look at 1 Corinthians 1:26. 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 26. God looks on the inside. He's choosing a king. He says, I want this one. His heart is after me. Not his looks, not that other things won't combine many times. But look at 1 Corinthians 1 now, and in verse 26. For you see, Paul says, you're calling, brethren, how not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, and not many noble are called. Now, they're called, but he's saying, you know, the smartest people many times, and the strongest, and the kings and queens, they're not the ones that are going to accept the invitation to be in my kingdom. But God has chosen foolish things of the world. The idea of a Bible being God's inspired word. You mean only one book that hasn't changed over all the years. You mean that's what, you see, the wise, you know, the knowledgeable, that can't be true. But God has chosen weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And base, that's poor and neglected things of the world. The things which are despised, God has chosen, yea, and the things which are not, to bring to naught things that are. God has chosen. Hey, you know, the idea of the gospel being preached and the plan of salvation. Well, you know, that doesn't make much sense. And how God made a man and how he made a first woman. You know, you can't figure that out in the test tubes. And so, but God, he chooses people different and his methods are different. He looks on our heart. Is the person humble? Is the person meek? And God knew David because he said, hey, he's after my heart. He wants my affection. He's going to do everything he can. He ends up, of course, as we say, we talk about he's a hero. The point is for all of us today, we're like David. I'm here to tell you, we don't have any beauty queens. You might have been Miss America, but you're not anymore. We don't have any Mr. Americas. You might have been. You might have had a chest out to here, but now you have the furniture disease. You know what that is? That's when your chest falls in your drawers. You're not Mr. America anymore. You're not an All-American anymore. You might have been an All-American, and you might have been fast and strong and all those things, but like all of us, we're not anymore. There's no more streets. We don't have any streets named after us. What we're trying to be is just good-hearted people. We're trying to get God's affection. That's what David was. Nobody said, hey, David's a shoo-in. David's a shoo-in to be king. Just look at him. He looks like a king. No, he was plain. Probably skinny at a young age. A lonely shepherd. On the outside, but on the inside, a heart full of God. He was probably voted on by his peers, least likely to succeed. And he ends up being what? The king. And a lot of times when we're growing up in young ages, teenagers try to teach our kids, you know, we make fun many times, the kids do, of the person that's not very attractive. Of the person that maybe gets all A's and doesn't play on the sports teams and he's not very popular. I read a story once about a boy like that. He was made fun of all during his high school years. And he was a kind of a skinny boy and scrawny boy, but really smart. And, of course, the people made fun of him for getting all A's. And there was a terrible car accident about 20 years later. This one man was at a car accident. They rushed him to the hospital near death. He's on the emergency ward, you know, a table and everything. And they're looking at him, blood, you know, just in terrible shape. And he looks up at the doctor and he said, aren't you Bobby Jones? He said, I sure am. I'm the Bobby Jones that you made fun of all through high school. You're the Bobby Jones that you never invited to any parties, pushed the books out of my hands. He said, yeah, that's me, Bobby Jones. I'm about to save your life. And he did. And the man who told the story was the man that was on the gurney. He said, maybe 20 years later, but I got a chance to tell the man, the boy, Doc, I'm sorry. And that's kind of like all of us. You know, we don't look so great on the outside many times, and people may not think we're going to succeed. But Samuel says, here's somebody, and this is the one that the Lord wants me to pick. Here comes the future king. Look at verse 11 now. 1 Samuel 16, verse 11. 1 Samuel 16 and verse 11. Here's what it says. We got that. Now, he said, bring him here. Verse 12, he sent and brought him. Now he was ruddy and not of a beautiful countenance and or godly to look at. And the Lord said, arise, anoint him, for this is he. Then Samuel took the horn of oil, anointed him in the midst of his brethren. The Spirit of the Lord came upon David from that day forward. So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah. Redheaded, again, probably a young teenage boy, nothing to look at. And that's who was chosen. I wonder, you know, that's a surprise to everybody. First of all, to get picked. Are you sure? And then everybody, what are they picking him for? Do you remember at school times when we used to choose teams? Okay, everybody line up. Like, you can't do that now because you probably wouldn't be politically correct because someone picked last. That's not good. And maybe that's not bad. But remember how they pick teams and they'd say that they'd be down to two people. And Laura tells a funny story. She's with the baby. No, but she probably can hear me. But she used to always, she wasn't a great athlete. She said she always got picked last. And in fact, she said it was always between her and this boy who had no athletic ability whatsoever. And she said it was her, and she'd be smiling, you know, there's two people left. I ain't going to be the loser. I ain't the last. I ain't the worst one. She said even sometimes they pick that person. And then there'd be Laura. And she said, and you know, she always said, I hated sports. I hated PE class because I was always picked last. Now, just imagine the odd time, you know, sometimes the coach might say, pick Laura first. Make her feel good, you know? Oh, okay, Laura. Then everybody else would go, what? What are you picking her for? What are you doing that for? She ain't any good. And that's like David's brothers. Maybe. What are you picking him for? Sometimes even when you are chosen and you do win, people don't even respect that. What about the family? They probably were astonished. And then he anoints them. Now you have from shepherd, he's the king. From the lowest to the highest. That's how God has all, what's what he's always done. He's taken the lowest, the least esteemed, improbable people and made them successful. Moses, I want you to go to Pharaoh and ask my, and tell, let my people go. I mean, Moses probably, his size and everything looked like he probably could be maybe a good physical leader. But Moses said, hold it. What? I'm not a good speaker. Maybe stutter. I'll get nervous and I won't be able to talk to him. Why don't you get the best speaker to go? He's not worried about the speaker. I'm going to help the guy. I'll help those. I need somebody who loves me. I need somebody whose heart's there. He won't give up when 9 and 10 times he says he's not going to let the people go. I need someone who's going to go the whole battle. I don't need someone just because he gets A in speech. I need somebody that, hey, he's going to fight the good battle and I'll help you. And Moses even figures out, can Aaron come with me? He took somebody that couldn't speak very well to get a message across to Pharaoh, who finally heard that message and let the people go. Rahab, the lowest profession on earth, I guess, is to be a prostitute. She's as low as you could get, but she heard the stories. I know who your king is. I heard about him on the other side of the river. I know who he is. And she said, I don't want to die. In fact, she said, I don't want to die, and I don't want what? Who else? I don't want my family to die. And, of course, when the Jericho walls fell in the city, one house stood. Rahab's. She went from the lowest. God rose her up, and now she's to the highest. In fact, in Matthew chapter 1, she's in the what? Genealogy, the lineage of Jesus. Raise your hand if your name's in Matthew 1. There's a prostitute who changed her life. Isn't that something? Gideon, I can't defeat the Midianites. They got, I don't know how many, 50 plus thousand people. The Lord said, yes, you can. I can't do it. He said, yes, you can. In fact, how many people you got? 32,000 or 22,000 is what they start off with. We're going to defeat him. He knocks down the army. How many? Do you remember how many he has? 300. 300 people. That's what. And you're going to fight the Midianites. How are we going to win? I'll tell you how you're going to win. Everybody get a torch. Remember, they had some lights. And then everybody get a pottery, some broken pot so you can break it. And you get 100 here, 100 here. He said, we'll surround them. 300 people are going to surround, who knows, thousands. And they made all kind of noise. God had a great plan. He went from, I don't know, I don't think we can do it. How are we going to do it? He knocked all the people down to 300 so that when they won, they would know that it was God that took you from low to high. And then when it comes to the apostles, he takes fishermen. They spend more time out in the water than they do on the land. And they're going to take the gospel. They talk to each other and to the fish. Now they're going to talk to everybody. They took the gospel to all the known world. He took them from low fishermen. Not that fishermen are low, even though I don't like to fish. I fish at the restaurant. And he took them from low. Now look at us. Look at us. Look where he takes us. There's a story of a boy in college. He started going to services, had long hair, had his hair up in a bandana and wore beads and flip-flops to services. And as time went on, he listened. Months and months went on. He listened to the gospel, finally became a Christian. Still wore his overalls to services, had his hair up, long hair, and had beads, had his flip-flops on. Time went on. He noticed not too many people with overalls on. And they asked him to maybe wait in the table, and he noticed that people had jackets. So a man gave him a jacket to wear. He put that jacket on. Still had long hair. Still had his beads. Still had flip-flops. And as time went on, he graduated from flip-flops, took the beads off as he got older, and he started just being as faithful as he could, and he tried to serve the Lord the best he could. Do you know what happened to that boy? He's speaking this morning at the Concord Church of Christ. I don't look as good as I did then. No beads. It's funny. I used to always wear my beads, you know. And some of the people at 12th Street Church, this is in the 70s. And so I had my hippie beads on. I was looking good, I thought. And the little boys would come up and say to their dad, they'd come and talk to me. And they'd say, Daddy, can I get some beads like Mr. Paul? No, boys don't wear beads. I remember that. And you know what? I was in Kentucky and there wasn't, you know, and I had long hair, and I played football at Western then, and my hair was long, and there wasn't any boys with long hair, and my beads, and I did have overalls. They were clean. In Canada, I never saw overalls till I came to the United States. I thought they were the coolest things in the world. And when I went back home to Canada in the summertime to my city, I was on the subway, and a guy offered me $100 for my overalls. I said, buddy, if I had some other clothes, I'd sell them to you for $100. I got nothing. What am I going to do? And for my flip-flops, I graduated to clogs, you see. But here's another story that goes with that. Cunningham, not one person at that church ever said, you know, you got strange clothes on, Paul. Your hair is too long. And I was, and again, a lot of people come in and they look a little different. And as long as they're modest, if someone came in a bathing suit, you might say, hey, can I get you a robe or something, you know, or you might try to direct them a little bit. I don't know, maybe not. But they never did. Not one of them ever did. And I sat down. They were always cordial. I was clean and everything. And then as time went on, of course, Don Bassett was the preacher. Mr. Bassett, Don Bassett has preached here before, I know. You know, Brother Bassett passed away just a few months ago. He was the first preacher I ever heard. And all of them were so nice to me. One time they said to me, Paul, would you baptize a boy who wore an earring? And I always say this, why not? I baptize girls with earrings. You know, one time when I was preaching down in Tampa, this was back in the 70s, I remember a boy came forward and to be baptized. I baptized. He's a college boy. I baptized him. And then a few months later, he came forward and just a good boy. He said, Paul, can I speak to the congregation? I said, sure. He said, you know, I've been a Christian. I'm trying the best I can. He said, and I know some of my friends out here, you guys wear earrings. He said, but I just don't think I ought to wear an earring. I don't know if I'm a good example for the kids and everybody. And so I said, I just want you to know that I'm sorry if I set a bad example. And for me, he said, I can't wear the earring anymore. So he took it off. It was just a small building, Eureka Springs. And so he went a few steps, opened the door, and he threw his earring out. All the girls went after it. No. And he came back in. And so I say, there's lots of things. So Paul, I got my hair cut. And I got off my overalls. In fact, I don't even have a pair anymore. You know, now I look at them, they look kind of goofy. I don't know. But especially if you get old, I guess you're working on the farm, but you can't preach in them very often. I say all that to say, David wasn't the best choice to look at. And sometimes we aren't. When God chooses all of us, and God says, you know what? I believe he can do it. He's taken everyone in this room as unique as we are. Did you know by the 12th week in the womb, your fingerprints, you have fingerprints by the 12th week. And everybody's got unique. Everybody's different. Figure that one out. And the Lord, how beautiful we're made in the womb. The Lord's working on us. And we're all unique. And he's taken each one of us. And he said, some of you are teachers. Some of you are doctors. Some of you are in the medical field. Some of you work outside. Some of you are at home. We're at all of us. And he's going to take us and he's going to make us be good workers for him. And what David did, David said, I trust God's going to take care of me and I'm going to obey him. And now he's going to be the king. David understood. He's chosen now. He was underestimated. There's no way he could be the king. And then he's underestimated the rest of his life. There's no way you could beat Goliath. There's no way you can do that. And as we'll see throughout the week, He was faithful. Sometimes your family says, you can't be faithful. Maybe that's what David's family said. But you can do it. There's lots of people. They have to say, Mama, I'm going to have to go to another congregation. I'm going to another church now. I just can't. I've got to serve the Lord this way, and the things I need to do are over here. And that's hard. That makes you sad. My family, so far, my mom and dad and my brother-in-law passed away. We've had 3 funerals since I've been preaching, and they've asked me to do all 3. I'm the most religious guy they know, I think. And so they asked me, and I do it. But they weren't knocking down the doors. They don't come and listen to me preach and things like that. But when time comes and they need somebody who's spiritually minded to their definition, they know where to go. And just for you, your family may not understand why you have to go here and why you go to a meeting on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night. You just keep trusting. And in the future, there'll be people that will listen. And you'll do what's right. Your friends sometimes don't understand. They don't understand. But you just do what's right. That's all you can. That's all you can do. After I was raised from the waters of baptism with my long hair, I went back home a few weeks later to Toronto to have, there was no church, nowhere for me to go. So I used to meet in the basement. Paul Earnhardt and Don Bassett used to send me tapes and I'd listen to them. And I'd have my Lord's Supper and sing songs. The whole town thought I was the weirdest guy in the world. My family thought I was weird. My friend, I didn't know. I was trying to do what was right. And they didn't understand. Sunday morning, my friends came out and said, hey, Mr. Sheen, can Paul come out and play football? We always play at the park on Sundays. And they said, is he home? First said, is he home? I said, he's home. Can he come out and play? He can't come out and play. Why not? He's having church. He went to church? No, he's having church. Where is he having it? In the basement. They said, I don't hear anything. I think he's eating something. He eats something and he gets quiet. So the guys went and they got to the window and they're looking down in my basement. And they said, what's he doing? I don't know. Be quiet. They looked down and said, he's eating something. It was the Lord's Supper time. They just thought this is a goofy guy down there. But then as time goes on, I went to my reunions, high school reunions, and I see my friends. I was there a few years ago. Some I hadn't seen for 30 or 40 years. And they said, Paul, when I die, I want you to do my funeral. And I had other boys come over to me and say, Paul, come here. I go to church too. Couldn't tell anybody else, but they could tell this guy who was a weirdo at first. All of us have stories like that. And David, his brothers probably said, what are you doing? How did you get picked? Others probably said, Saul, he's a little guy. Why had he get picked? Even brethren sometimes can say, you know what? You'll never lead a song. You'll never teach a class. You won't be an elder. You won't be a deacon. And you know what? You might not. But it won't be because your brethren said you could. Sometimes they'll discourage you. We need to be like David. Seek God first. God's affection. David becomes king. Now, what did God see in David that we didn't? As I said, he was spiritually minded. That's what he saw. He saw someone after his own heart. He thought continually about God. That's what we're saying. When you're trying to get someone's affection, and when you get it, they get up in the morning and they think about you. During the day, they think about you. That's what we have to be like David. We've got to try to get God's affection. Think of, don't just pray once, pray without ceasing. Don't just pray in the morning, pray in the afternoon, pray tonight. Read about them, talk about them. You know, we talk about everything with everybody. We talk about sports. We talk about politics. We talk people about Jesus. And you can get it in there. Well, you'd be surprised. Well, what about what Trump tweeted the other day? What about what God said in the Bible the other day? You can go back to it. Well, what do you think about the Carolina Panthers winning? Oh, man, that was good. I couldn't believe it. It reminded me of the story in the Bible about. You see, you could introduce things. You got to be tactful, but you can bring it up. The best places at work and places like that where people say, I just had a rough day. I had a rough week, rough weekend. I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, well, you know what? I heard a sermon about that. Boy, it was really helped me. Yeah, I had a bad weekend. I just know what I'm going to do next weekend. Boy, I heard a story. It changed my life. I don't feel like that anymore. What was the story? And then you tell them. talk to about people. That's what David was trying to get God to say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Here's what you need to think about. Look at Philippians 4, verse 8. What should I think about? Philippians 4 and in verse 8. Here's some things to think about. Things. Think about things, finally, brethren, that are true. Honest, Philippians 4, 8. Just, pure, lovely, of good report. If there's anything of value, if there's anything praiseworthy, think on these things. That's what I think David did. He thought about those things. He was spiritually minded. And because of his background, he probably, as a lonely shepherd and needy and so forth, he could relate to the people. He was very humble. He was very humble. In Psalms 89, you can read about David. God knew, here's going to be my king. He's spiritually minded, number one, and he's humble and meek. 89, verse 19 to 21. Then thou spakest in a vision to the Holy One and said, I have laid help upon one that is mighty. I have exalted one chosen out of the people. I have found David my servant. With my holy oil have I anointed him, with whom my hand shall be established. My arm also shall strengthen him. David's referred to here as his servant. God knew that's who I'm picking. His life had taught him to be a king. His time as a shepherd. What do you learn when you go into nature? If you go out into the woods, what do you learn out there? What's the big teacher out there? What's that? God takes care. I tell you, a lot of people, next time you worry, go out to the field and look at the birds. You know why? The birds don't what? They don't worry. In fact, birds, what do they do all the time? They wake you up. This morning they were waking me up. They're chirping. Hey, at 6 o'clock, guys, don't be so happy. They're happy at 6. They're chirping and everything. And then it's time to go to bed, they go to sleep. All during the day, they're flying around and they're getting stuff to eat and they're chirping and having a good old time. They don't worry. When you go out into nature, there's something about what it teaches. It's quiet. And you look at things you haven't seen before. You look at trees. Some trees in a lifetime of a tree have over 1 million leaves. 1 million leaves. Now, if you sat there long enough for many years, you could count them all. You say, man, that's 1 million. That's a whole bunch. God's plan makes a tree have 1 million leaves. And you see birds. And you see the little rabbits. And you see other animals. And I tell you what, you hear sounds you've never seen. You look up at nighttime and you see stars you've never seen. It's just the idea of camping and looking up and seeing all the stars. And also, it's so quiet. You can hear yourself think. And you meditate. When Jesus didn't even have time, he was so hectic and running around. Do you remember what it says? He went to a mountaintop to pray. And so sometimes everybody, we got to find our own little place in nature. Even if it's in a city, you can sometimes find it in your house. Find it in your backyard. You learn. You learn little things that are important things. And that's what a shepherd's life did for him. He was outside in nature. He saw the animals and he saw how God took care of people. And as a lonely shepherd, he thought about God. Here's what he said he thought about. Look at Psalms 18. Here are some things that David wrote about during his time and what he learned being a shepherd. Psalms 18, verse 1 to 3. Here's what he learned being a shepherd. God knew that. I'm going to love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord's my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my strength, to whom I'll trust. My buckler, the horn of my salvation, my high tower. I'll call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised, so I shall be saved from my enemies. A lot of these things are some things that reference to being a shepherd. He says, you're my rock. They use rocks many times as one of the boundaries on the backside or the front side, whatever it is. Usually there was only one way in and one way out. And many times a shepherd would lay across that entryway. And just so to be protected from the bat, from the other animals. And the idea of my strength, he had to have strength. And I call upon the Lord. He saved me from his physical enemy, but he learned how the Lord helped him when he was a shepherd. 19 and verse 1, look what he learned looking up in the stars. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. He looked up as a shepherd, and he knew somebody made all those planets. Somebody made all those stars. And then he also had time to think about what God said in verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect. It converts the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure and makes wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right. They rejoice the heart. The commandments of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter than honey and the honeycombs. Moreover, by them is thy servant warned, and in keeping them there is great reward. That's what he learned. Being a shepherd, he learned those things. Keeping the Lord's word, great reward. He now fully relies on the Lord to keep him. He's going to be king of Israel now. He's learned to trust. David now had faced real trials when he gets up here. He had, in 1 Samuel 17, turn to 1 Samuel 17. We're going to talk about this tonight. 1 Samuel 17, he'd had some real life experiences. He knew God will help you. Look what he says. This is why he thinks he can defeat the giant. 1 Samuel 17:31, when the words were heard which David spoke and rehearsed them before Saul, he sent for him. David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go fight with the Philistine." And Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him. You're but a youth, and he's a man of war." David said to Saul, "Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. I went after him, and I smote him, delivered it out of his mouth, and when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant who slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defiled the armies of the living God." As a shepherd, he killed a lion and a bear, just a little old guy, because the Lord was with him, and now he's going to have to fight this tall, slow guy? Oh, he knew, I'm okay. He had learned that. He's going to be a good king because he knew in his journey through life now to be a king, God's with him. And by the time he reached this, God, as I said, had guided him through so many trials and so many tribulations and also some joys and some sad times too. Some sad times as a shepherd. Some of his sheep got killed and he's by himself. And just other things, maybe not enough food to eat at time. He's now ready to be king of Israel. He's now worthy to be king. He went from a lowly shepherd to the king. That's all of us. We're born, we go through life, we have a lot of trials and when we're young and so forth. And what age as you go through life? And finally, somewhere in your life, you realize life isn't very happy right now. Life isn't very, you know, it's not complete. You need something in your life. And somehow, providentially, the Lord sends somebody into your life and says, "You know what? Drugs aren't any good. Alcohol's no good. Pornography's no good. Fornication, adultery, whatever it might be, all these things are not any good. Let me introduce to you somebody called Jesus. But I'm so bad, he'll never forgive me. I'm so low, I don't even know if they'll let me in. The church building would fall down if I came in." And that's how low they are. And maybe that's some of our lives. Somebody comes, introduces Jesus to us. And now we start listening. And we realize the blood of Jesus was shed for me. Jesus loves me. And he'll take away my sins. I can be in his family. I can have a hope of a home in heaven. We're now baptized for the remission of our sins and we're raised. We start a new life. We now have a hope. We now have gone from the lowest. Now we're at the highest. We've gone from no family to a family. We are now priests of a holy nation. And then after you pass away from this earth, your story remains. Like Miss Karen's did. It remains. And it keeps teaching. Well, I lived in London, Ontario, and we started a church there. There's a young guy we met. He's about 27, 26, 7 years old. His name was David Glant. And David was a street person, lived all over the streets in Canada, was a drug addict and so forth. And when one day he just called our number that we had, he said, "Can I ask you some Bible questions?" And so we answered him. So we met with David. At that time, David was living on the streets. And we got David a house, got him a place, like a room at the men's house downtown London, where they, like a halfway house kind of a place. And so David lived in there, and he started coming to services with us. And as time went on, David graduated from living. David, we baptized David, and David was living in this place where they had lunch and free, you know, your food was taken care of. Well, David got a job there. David's job was now he handed out the food to the guys that he used to be in line with. And he's getting his life together. He's getting off of drugs. And David says, Paul, I think I'm doing something wrong. He says, but I think it's right. I said, well, what's that, David? He said, I took some of our Bible tracts and I'm putting them in the lunch boxes, bags when I give to them. I said, well, what's bad about it? He said, we're not supposed to give them anything religious. I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'd do it and just talk to the Lord on Judgment Day about that. I think that's a... I said, I think that's one of those things, I'm going to go with it. You know, I'm going to go. If that's the worst thing you did, then you lived a pretty good life, you know. So David did it. One Sunday it came, David, we were going to sing it. Remember, we only had about 10, 12 members at first. And so David said, I said, Dave, we're going to be singing. David, he had a beautiful voice. He's about 28, 9. I said, David, he graduated, got him his job there, got some money. He got his own apartment. And so we're going to do singing at night. And I said, David, you want to lead a song? Why don't you try to lead a song? You got a beautiful voice. He said, I'm going to do it. So Sunday night, he shows up. He said, okay, everybody, turn your songbooks to 555. We turned to 555. David smiled. He said, I went through the whole songbook this afternoon. This is the song with the best words that I could find. And I looked at the other guys, and I said, I never sang this song ever. I don't know the tune. He said, you know. David said, you know Paul? I said, I never sung it in my life, buddy. He goes, he got real sad, put his head down. Then he lifted his smile and said, how about we make up a tune? I said, well, David, you can't kind of make up tunes. It doesn't work like that, you know. So now he puts his head down again. He's sad now. Then he smiles. He said, how about we just all say the words? And we all said the words. It was one of the most memorable songs we never sang, I've ever sung. And then he sat down. Well, David, eventually we went to see him one day, and months later, and he didn't show up one Sunday, and we went to his place, and we opened his door, and the landlord did. And David, because of his past condition and his heart and all the drugs he'd taken, they just took over his body, and he had a heart attack at a young age. Well, he died, and his body was flown to Prince Edward Island. That's where he was from. That's one of the islands. That's where Anna Green Gables books and all that are from. And his mother had him buried there. And this is what, I've never been there, just seen a picture of the tombstone. One day, if I ever get to go there, David's buried there. And this is what it says on his tombstone, paraphrased. David searched all his life for a purpose. He found it when he found Jesus Christ. That's what it says. And his mother was not a church-going lady. That's what she said she learned from David, just being, you know, from David's life and what he said. And you know what? That's what David is. And that's what we're going to talk about the rest of the week. David was low. Not a terrible low, but I mean a shepherd and a young boy. And next thing you know, he's the king. He's the king. We're going to talk throughout the week the challenges. He's going to meet a giant called Goliath. He's going to meet a challenge, a giant called jealousy and bitterness that's going to be thrown at him from Saul. He's going to meet a giant of temptation when Bathsheba enters his life. And then he's going to meet a challenge that all of us are going to meet. And that's the challenge of having to die. And we'll see how David faces it. Let's have a prayer. Father, as always, we're so thankful that you love us. Thank you for bringing us from the lowest of sin and being in darkness and raising us to be in the heights of being in your family, in your kingdom, now with the hope of a home in heaven and the forgiveness of our sins. Thank you for the story of David and his life, how that he showed us that to trust and obey is the only way, how that you took care of him so many ways in a physical way, but most importantly, spiritually. May we also be like David and after your heart, after your affections and your approvals. Thank you for loving us. Continue to be with us. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you.